now, ladies and gentlemen, it's time for the Ray Shasho Show, brought to you by the Publicity Works Agency. Each week, Ray spotlights in-depth interviews with legendary and up-and-coming authors and music artists. Ray also features the movers and the shakers of the music and publishing industries and suggests important methods for getting the most out of your public relations and marketing needs. Please welcome music journalist, author, and entrepreneur, Ray Shasho.
Hello, everyone. I'm Ray Shasho, broadcasting from BBS Radio, and welcome to the show where we spotlight legendary and up-and-coming music artists and authors. Brought to you by the Publicity Works Agency. Visit us at www.publicityworksagency.com. And remember, we shine only when we make you shine. Currently celebrating their 25th anniversary, multi-platinum rock band Candlebox has not only withstood the test of time, but more importantly, they withstood trends, trials, and tribulations and come out stronger for it. Because for this hard-working band out of Seattle, the goal has always been the same, to create iconic music that would last a lifetime. Taking their name after a Midnight Oil song, Candlebox burst into the scene in 1991 with their debut self-titled album that went on to sell more than 4 million copies, was certified 4 times platinum, and landed them in the number 7 spot on the Billboard charts. Their follow-up album, Lucy, was also well-received, earning them a platinum certification and solidifying them as a tour de force in the thriving 90s music scene. The band would then go on to release Happy Pills in 1998, which would be their last album before their eventual hiatus in 2000. The driving force behind Candlebox's success has been their explosive live show, and throughout their career, they've toured with such bands as Living Color, The Flaming Lips, Our Lady Peace, Rush, Henry Rollins, Metallica, and more. They were also a featured band on the main stage at Woodstock 94 and made repeat live performances on the David Letterman show. They are best known for the singles Change, You, Far Behind, and Simple Lessons. Far Behind from their debut album entered Billboard's top 20 in July of 1993 and didn't drop off the charts until January of 1994. The videos for Far Behind and You were in seemingly perpetual rotation on MTV and became two of the most requested videos of 1993. The band took a break from 2000 to 2006, and in 2008 the band reformed and released their fourth studio album called Into the Sun. This meant their return since 1998's Happy Pills. Also, they released a live album called Alive in Seattle, which included tracks from all their past albums. Candlebox then spent years touring and released their sixth album, Disappearing in Airports, which debuted at number 9 on the Billboard charts and spurred many tours, including a successful European tour. In January of 2018, the group kicked off their much-publicized 25 Years of Rockin' Still Rolling tour and announced 2 exclusive Seattle shows with all 4 original members, which sold out in minutes. The tour kicked off on January 25th in Grand Rapids, Michigan. This powerhouse band will perform the hits from the album that launched their careers, including Far Behind, You, and Cover Me, as well as offer a career retrospective by playing songs from the entire 6-CD catalog all the way up to their latest release, Disappearing in Airports. To keep the tour fresh and exciting for fans, frontman and founder Kevin Martin decided to incorporate a variety of show formats and performance styles that would highlight the band's dexterity. The routing compromises large venue concerts and appearances on such festivals as Rocklahoma, as well as the intimate acoustic dates that lend themselves to a storyteller's format. The tour is for our fans. Those have continued to support us for 25 years, said Martin. It's been an honor to play for them throughout the years, and we feel truly fortunate that our music continues to resonate with our audience. We can't wait to hit the road for this one. I think people will be in for some big surprises. In addition to Martin, Candlebox members include Adam Curry on bass, Brian Quinn on lead guitar, Island Styles on guitar, and Robin Diaz on drums. For more information, please visit www.candlebox.com. Candlebox on Facebook, www.facebook.com/candlebox/. Please welcome to the show the legendary singer, guitarist, and songwriter for Candlebox, Kevin Martin. How you doing, Kevin?
I love that intro, man. I tell you what, this is your life.
This is your life. Yeah, you remember that, huh?
That was great. I had 25 years of flashbacks there, man. That's great.
I can't believe it's been 25 years, you know? It's amazing.
I can't either. I pinch myself every day.
Well, pretty cool. You got some Florida dates coming up, and I'm here in beautiful Sarasota, very close to Tampa. You've got February 28th.
Duff. Yep. Tell Brian Duff from ACDC I said hello. Tell Brian
Duff from
ACDC I said hello. He lives there in Sarasota, doesn't he?
That's right. He lives very close to me, as a matter of fact.
He's a good dude.
Yeah, he is. He's a big auto racer enthusiast. So
he's the one who got me into racing Porsches
back in
94. He was doing road races, and he's like, "You should really race that car of yours." And I was like, "That sounds like a great idea."
How many cars do you have?
Well, I used to have four. Now I'm down to one because I'm smart.
Like guitars, right?
Exactly.
Some of you guys are cutting their collections down nowadays.
Yeah, it's crazy.
February 28th, they're going to be at Ponte Vedra Concert Hall in Ponte Vedra Beach, and you have additional Florida dates March 1st, Janice Live, which is very close to me in St. Pete, March 2nd at the Plaza Live in Orlando, and March 3rd at the Cultural Room in Fort Lauderdale. And I'm sure all those dates are going to be, if not sold out, or coming up and will be sold out. No doubt about that.
Well, I hope so. We sold out the Culture Room. But, you know, it's interesting because I think, like you mentioned, you know, the 25 years of rock and still rolling. You know, I think people kind of forget how long we've been doing this. And you know, everyone has the debut album, and that's what they remember us for mostly. But I think, you know, there are so many other kind of great songs that we've written that outside of that first album that people forget about. So, you know, we try our best to cover all, all facets of our career. But you know, we're generally stuck to that first album. And this area that I'm in, it's like your phone will go from four bars to one bar to four bars to one bar. So I apologize.
Where are you anyway?
I'm in Los Angeles. Apparently, I'm in hell, but I'm in Los Angeles.
I'm going to go over your latest album, Disappearing in Airports, in just a minute. I'm going to ask you something else first, but that album, I gave it 5 stars, man. That's an incredible album. It's one of those albums, every track is awesome, and you can listen to
it
over and over again, man. It is fantastic, and I want to go over that. I just want to mention one thing before that, which I think is really important. Your debut album and Far Behind, which is, you know, an incredible, you know, successful song and, you know, still growing on YouTube like crazy with views. It was written, wasn't it written about friends who suffered heroin overdoses?
Yeah, I wrote it for one of my best friends was Andy Wood, the singer from Under Love Bone.
Right.
And when Andy passed, I kind of farted around with the idea of writing a song for him for about a year. And then Barty, our bass player, came in with that melody for the song, the main guitar melody, and the lyrics just kind of popped in my head. And initially I was singing, "Now, Andy, I didn't mean to treat you bad," that he did it anyways. And when I went to record the song, I wanted to be a little bit more vague and a little bit, you know, allow people to kind of give it their own, maybe have it mean something to them. So I changed it to "Now, Maybe." But yeah, it was, I've lost several friends, unfortunately, over the years, not only to heroin overdoses, but now suicide and other tragic instances. So it's one of those songs that's, you know, as much as I like to joke that it's been paying my rent for 26 years, it's still very, very special to me, and I will never tire of singing that song.
You know, the heroin overdoses are blowing me away. It's an epidemic in this country. I don't care what size the city is. Here in Bradenton, Florida, we're one of the worst in the country. My son works with Walgreens. He's a manager, and he sees overdoses in his bathroom constantly, over and over again. What the hell is going on, man? When I was in high school, it was LSD, pot, you know, and things like that, but, you know, heroin was like a no-no. You know, you stood away from that kind of stuff. Why do you think it exploded? Why are people getting so hooked on it?
Well, it's 100% the pharmaceutical industry with the, you know, the painkillers. And it's when you're giving painkillers to kids at the age of 13, 14, 15 for a broken arm or, you know, an injury in football, baseball, basketball, tennis, volleyball, whatever it is, you know, you ought to be ashamed of yourself giving them something like Oxycontin at such a young age. And that becomes an addiction, you know. And I remember my first time when I was 13 years old, my first Valium, I remember it very well, very vividly. And I was like, this is a feeling I want to have every single day of my life. The problem was, when I was 13 years old, you couldn't find Valium anywhere. So lucky me, I stayed away from it. But nowadays, with, like, you know, Florida being one of the main guilty parties in pharmaceutical distribution, you know, that's why you're seeing so much of it there. You're seeing a massive amount in Ohio, Maryland, because it's an unregulated pharmaceutical industry. And so I think that when you can't get a hold of those painkillers anymore, heroin's the cheapest thing you can get that's going to get you that high. And when you can buy it now for $5, apparently, I think it is, for a balloon, that's crazy.
Wow.
Man,
you know, that is crazy.
So why not, you know?
Yeah, that's amazing. And the suicides are kind of led up from heroin. That's what I've heard. And I just heard about Chris Cornell's wife coming out saying that his drug problem led to the suicide. And you know, it's so sad, man. Chris Cornell was an awesome guy. He was, you know, he's one of the guys I thought was cool. You know, and you don't get too many guys today that are cool. You know what I mean? And have that persona. You knew all those guys, right?
I did. I met them all when I was probably about 16 years old. Actually, I was 16. I just started working at a shoe store called Fluvog. And Susan Silver, who was Chris's ex-wife and manager for Soundgarden at the time, was my manager at the shoe store. So the guys would all come in for their flyers to hang on the telephone poles and stuff around town. So that's how I met Chris, Lane, Jerry, of course, Andy from Mother Love Bone, Jeff and Stone from Pearl Jam, from at the time Mother Love Bone. All those musicians came in because Susan had this great management company, and that's how I met them all.
I mean, all the greats from the 90s. I look at, you know, they call it grunge because it's a Seattle, you know, scene and all that. But to me, the 90s was the last effort for rock and roll. After the 90s, it was over. I mean, there wasn't any rock music anymore or anything that resembled rock music. You know, it was a good time for me. It was a great time for music.
Yeah. I don't disagree.
Yeah, exactly.
I just think, you know, I keep thinking about that Quincy Jones article where there, you know, there aren't songs anymore because people have forgotten how important a song is. And I think that's the one thing about, you know, people always ask me, what is it about, you know, the Seattle sound or the Seattle movement? And I don't personally just claim it to be Seattle. I think it's anything from 1989 to like 1995, 96. That really made an effort to write songs. It was the honesty and the sincerity and the lack of caring about success. It was we're playing what we want to play, writing what we want to write, and if it hits and somebody pays attention to it, that's great. If not, you know, we're doing it for ourselves. It's not for the attention.
Yeah, you're a true artist. That's what a true artist is all about. You know, it's not a corporate machine or anything like that. The Seattle scene reminded me of San Francisco, like back in the 60s, where all those bands came out of the 60s. San Francisco, you know, very similar to that. But like I said, the last remnants of rock and roll was definitely in the 90s. I tell everybody that because, you know, after that, it basically didn't exist. Your friend was Andrew Patrick Wood. He meant a lot to you as well, right?
Yeah, Andy was... You know, it's funny. It's not like we were best friends and we talked on the phone every day. You know, we had an interesting relationship that, you know, predominantly resided in a shoe store. But the conversations about music, you know, Andy was one of those guys that if you got him started on it, you know, he wouldn't shut up. And because he loved it so much. And I think that, you know, that was touched upon in the Pearl Jam documentary, that was released a few years back, 20, because, you know, and I think Chris talked very frankly about Andy's, you know, love and talent of music. And so our relationship really resided in that shoe store. But, you know, it would be an hour and a half to 2.5 hours of conversation. And even if customers would come in, he wouldn't leave. He'd wait for me to finish working, and we would pick up where our conversation left off. So that's what he meant to me was, you know, somebody who took the time to share
right.
his love of music with somebody that he didn't have to give, you know, 2 seconds to. But we had a really interesting relationship, and I really cared about him. And the day he died, you know, that city changed incredibly. And then, of course, you know, it affected so many people and so many artists and people that were involved with Mother Love Bone's career and then what became Pearl Jam. So it was a catalyst for an enormous amount of change.
He formed Malfunction at 14, I think. I think he was like 14 years old when he started that band.
Yeah, Regan was 13, and his brother, Kevin, I think, was 18.
Wow, that's amazing. Well, you've been involved with other bands as well. The Gracious Few, that's one of them, right? Also known as TGF.
Yeah.
Which was an interesting band, too, because you had some guys from Candlebox in that. And you were also in, is it Les Projets? Is that how you pronounce it?
Les Projets, yeah, we should.
And you had Morgan Rose from Seven Dust in that band with you as well. What happened with those two bands? What's going on with those?
Well, the Gracious Few is just a constant argument between the guys in Live and myself, because I keep threatening them that we're going to make a new record, and then they threaten me that we're going to make a new record. So eventually one of us is going to make that. But, you know, it's the scheduling, obviously, with
right.
The Gracious Few. You know, I'm so busy now with Ed being back in the band. They've got so much going on. And, you know, and respectfully so, I think they should. Next year's the 25th anniversary of Throwing Copper for them, which is, you know, enormous. So, you know, I think that eventually we'll find a month or two to sit down and finish up some of the songs that we have and write some new ones. Same with Les Projets. You know, that was an accident. Morgan had worked with me on a song with this band called The Infinite Circle, and asked me to come sing on something. And then Morgan's like, let's make a record. And I was like, cool, you know, that's fine. So on my flight out to New Jersey to make this record, I was assuming that I was producing it, only to show up and realize that I was singing on it, which is why it became Les Projets. So, it's always been kind of some happy accidents in my life. I don't know if anything's ever going to happen with either band other than, you know, releasing the songs that we released, but I love everybody that I've worked with in both projects. They're wonderful, amazing, brilliant human beings. And I have nothing but the utmost respect for them all. Would I like to go out on the road with Les Projets, Candlebox, and The Gracious Few? Absolutely, because I think it'd be a lot of fun. But it's impossible for me to sing those songs the way I sing on those records, so I don't think that'll ever happen.
But Disappearing in Airports is the sixth studio album by Candlebox. It was released, I think it was April of 2016, on Pavement Entertainment. And first of all, Disappearing in Airports is a great title. I mean, you know, that's something that sticks with you every time you hear it. You know, I love the title. The cover was basically a tribute to another friend, right?
Yeah, Scott Rivers Fisher, yeah.
Exactly. This album, you were trying to reach maybe a different audience on that one, maybe some of the younger crowd that are coming up and want to discover Candlebox Music. Is that true? Or
yeah, oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, it was definitely let's see how much we can open this envelope, not push it, just see how far we can open it. You know,
right.
And that's yeah, we wanted people that may not have ever heard of us to hear it, and those fans that we have to kind of grow with us in the future direction that we're going to be going.
I got to say, man, I think it's one of the best albums that Candlebox has ever put out. I really
Thank
mean
you.
That. You know, it, every track is incredible. Only Because of You, cool track to me. I heard a little Peter Gabriel in that, believe it or not, you know.
Oh, sure. Yeah, sure. 100%.
Vexatious, which I know the story about that. You were in Bali, and there was like an 18-year-old girl there, and she was totally oblivious to her surroundings, and that kind of pushed the envelope for you.
Yeah. Well, there's nothing like, you know, sitting on a beach in front of the most beautiful sunset you've ever seen, and then there's a kid there just taking pictures of themselves, and, you know, totally oblivious to anything around them, and how self-aware you can possibly be to your looks is just shocking to me.
Yeah, especially in Bali, you know, which is, yeah. You know, basically, you know, a screensaver. It's the most beautiful
place.
Yeah,
on everybody's computer.
Yeah, exactly. It had some great guitar on that track. You got a great video on that one. You got a great video out, and they can go right to your website, Supernova, which is, another really cool song, Shake My Galaxy, Supernova Me. Really cool tune. Alive at Last, another awesome tune. You know, Can You See the Lights? I'm Swimming In, Lost Amongst the Stars, and All the Lies, I'm Spinning. I mean, the lyrics on this album is tremendous. You know, very
Thanks,
deep,
man.
You know, very meaningful. Well, talk a little bit about Alive at Last, the lyrics to that one.
Well, that was a song that I had written. I have three friends that have terminal cancer, one of which passed away last year. So I have two left that, you know, you say the word terminal in hopes that it's going to turn around, but you know it's not. And I wanted to write a song that was maybe from their perspective of when that moment comes where, you know, they get to let go, and no one wants to leave this planet early, you know,
right.
Of course we don't. And even those that choose to take their own life, I don't think they want to leave. It's just a necessity sometimes. But when you do get to let go and you're in that, the pain that all these cancer patients struggle with, even the ones that go into remission and recovery and stuff, you know, it's enormous. And I've watched it eat several friends alive. So I wanted something just to allow them to feel as though it was okay. And you know, I wanted a song that maybe they could take with them, knowing that I'm not going to be there to say goodbye. I know I'm going to get a phone call at some point, and it's not going to be from them. And so I wanted to give them something where I wanted to know, you know, it's how much I love you, and you've made an enormous impact on my life, and I wish you nothing but the best on the other side, and I'll see you there at some point. And so that's what that song's about. In the Swimming in the Lies, you know, that's the you know, I think they all realize that when a doctor comes and says, you know, there's a 20% chance or a 10% chance, you know, that's really just being deceitful, because honestly, if you have terminal cancer or cancer, there is no cure. So that's really what the lyrics are about, is it's just accepting that life is giving you something that you're going to have to live with till you can no longer breathe.
It's a beautiful track, man. And, you know, I lost my sister-in-law to cancer, one of my best friends to cancer, and my other best friend committed suicide. So I'm there with you, man. I know it exactly.
Oh, dude.
The pain. It's terrible, you know. It really
yeah.
is. Another track, I've Got a Gun. So You Better Run. This. Go ahead and talk a little bit about that one.
Well, let's talk about it because of what just happened in school down
exactly.
there in Florida.
Exactly.
And what we're going to continue to see. you know, this, I've taken a lot of heat for this song. I've had, you know, I got emails last year from, or when the record came out, from fans. I've been a fan since day one. I'm burning all your stuff. You know, how dare you, take my guns from me. I'm like, you know, if you've been a fan from day one, you know how politically active and vocal I have been since my first album. I do not hold back my feelings towards, guns. I think they're completely stupid and idiotic. That doesn't mean that you don't have a right to have them. That's just my opinion. What this song is about is it's written from the perspective of that idiot that wants to argue that the Second Amendment allows them to have semi-automatic and fully automatic guns, any number of guns they want in a state like Florida where there's no law to how many you can own. You don't need a license to buy one. You don't have to register it. You can go in and buy one at a Walmart. You can buy an AR-15. I see no reason whatsoever that should be legal. You know, if you cannot buy alcohol at the age of 18, you should not be able to buy a handgun or an assault rifle. I guess you have to be 21 to buy a handgun. But even then, the fact that you don't have to register it is insane to me, you know. Now, that's not saying that if you're a gun owner, you can't own guns. That's fine, 100%. Go ahead and own them. You know what? But don't lock them up. And if you know that someone in your household has a bit of, if they're a little bit off, make sure they can't get into it. Make sure they can't get a hold of those guns. And everyone has the right to bear arms. But this song was written from the perspective of that person that tries to argue with me that their Second Amendment rights allow them to have these types of guns, because that is not what the Second Amendment is about. And the argument behind it is dated, and frankly, it's uneducated. It's an uneducated argument. So that's what that song's about. So if you're a Candlebox fan and you hate what I just said, you know what? I'm sorry. That's my opinion.
Amen, brother. You know, I went on a rant on Facebook a couple of days ago with the same argument. These guys, kept talking to me about, their guns, and I got to have my guns and this and that. And I'm saying, nobody needs these automatic weapons, man. They shouldn't even be manufactured. They shouldn't even be made, you know. I mean, when I was in high school, we never had guns. You know, some guy pulled out a switchblade or something. That's about it. But, everything was fine when you just had a handgun and you just had a rifle for shooting, you know, which I'm not a fan of hunting either. But I agree with you 100%, man. This has got to stop. And they need to go proactive and start, banning this kind of stuff. And anybody that sells it, hey, you go to jail if you're selling automatic weapons. That's what I truly believe.
You're absolutely right. Listen, if you buy a car from somebody, you have to register that vehicle. And that person that sells you that car has to send paperwork into that state to say this vehicle is no longer mine. In order for you to get insurance on that car, all these things have to happen. But if I sell you a handgun in Florida, right here out of my car, I don't have to tell anybody, and you don't have to tell anybody you bought it. And that is just as lethal as the vehicle I'm sitting in right now talking to you.
Right.
Okay? The two things are comparable. Don't tell me they're not comparable, because they absolutely are.
And, they always have the case that, all these guys are sick. Nobody is safe with a gun. I don't care who you are. You can't trust anybody with a gun, Look at things have happened with cops, if you arm teachers, what if that teacher gets mad at a kid and starts blowing everybody away? I mean, it's you can't be safe. Nobody is safe with a gun, the Second Amendment thing, that was years ago. That's when, the country was being taken over and you had to protect yourself and things like that. It's totally different now. It doesn't make any sense. I wish things would change. And I thank you for writing a song like that.
I might be wrong, but I do think that the Second Amendment is the only amendment that has not been amended since it was written.
Probably right. You're probably right.
I don't know.
Some of these people think that the government's going to take over and I got to defend myself. Look, if the government takes over, you can't defend yourself. There's no way.
Yeah, good luck.
Good luck on that. Good luck, fighting an army or whoever else. Forget it. It's ridiculous. Anyway, some other tracks on this album I love, Spotlights, first of all, The Bridge was an old school 90s rock song, which took me back to the 90s and great days from then. Spotlight's another great tune with incredible lyrics.
Thank you.
Swept Away from Holiday, Had to Learn to Play Pretend. I love that.
Thank you.
Another great song. God's Gift is a pure rocker. Great guitar work on a lot of these tracks, by the way.
Players. My guys know how to play, that's for sure.
Oh, you have some great musicians, you know, playing with you. You really do. And another rocker, Keep on Waiting. Awesome track. Another great guitar. She says this is the last time you get high. You keep on waiting to survive. I mean, you know, can't get any better than this. You know, and I advise everybody to go out and buy this album because it's one of the best in a long time. It really
Thanks,
is.
Thanks, man. You're awesome.
I know good music, period. I've been around a while listening to good music for a long, long time. Now, the personnel on this album, though, is different than who's on the road, right? Except for one guy. Is it Adam? Adam's is also on the road, or...?
Adam and Brian are on the road with me. Dave Cruzen fills in occasionally because he's got lower back and, you know, obviously carpal tunnel issues because he's been playing since he was like 5 years old. Adam, Brian, and Dave are, you know, they're actually on the record. And then Mike Leslie, the guitar player who I wrote a lot of the songs with and played on the album, is in a band in Detroit called The Lows. So he doesn't play, but maybe every now and then with me just because he wants to get out and jam. But
and Brian and Mike do a lot of solo stuff as well, and they got their own websites, so they're involved in a lot of other things. A lot of people might not know Dave Cruzen was the original drummer of Pearl Jam, which is awesome.
Yeah, Pearl Jam 10. Yeah, he just got inducted in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Really cool. And you guys deserve to be there as well. You made the comment that you've never been a fan of a Candlebox record except for Disappearing in Airports, and that's a true statement, man. That you can listen to every track on that album and just listen to it over and over again. So I can't emphasize enough how good that album is. Who are some of the bands that influenced you when you were growing up?
Oh man, I grew up mainly on like new wave and punk rock. I mean, I of course was listening to Rush because my older brother Dennis, he's 8 years older than me, so I heard, you know, Rush incessantly and nonstop, and Elton John. My sister was big into the Cars, the Clash, and kind of the new wave and punk scene then. So that's really what I was kind of driven by because I was an angry kid. I was the youngest of four, and I had two older brothers that picked on me constantly. So punk rock was the one outlet that I had. You laugh now. I wasn't laughing then.
I know. I got an older brother.
I really loved the kind of the English punk rock scene. And then, of course, the older I got, you know, the Texas scene was with the Marching Plague and the Butthole Surfers and a lot of that kind of punk scene that was happening down there was really influential on me. But, you know, I also loved Otis Redding. My mom listened to R&B when I was growing up, and Otis and Aretha were two of my favorites. And really inspired by Otis. I think just kind of his rhythmic sense and tempo which he sings at is something that I've probably stolen more than I'd like to admit from any one artist. And of course, Robert Plant and Steven Tyler, two really brilliant rhythmic singers. Those have been, you know, really my main influences.
I'm telling you, man, I'd have a heart attack trying to sing like Tyler. I don't know how he does it, man.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's crazy.
You've got a great voice, and that's what keeps Candlebox going. You have an incredible voice. I just hope it stays for the next, you know, 20, 30 years.
Thanks, man.
It's awesome. Did you always want to become a singer?
No, I initially was a drummer, and I got the gig by accident. A buddy of mine asked me to come sing on some demos. And I was like, well, I'm playing drums in this band. He goes, no, but I've heard you sing. Would you come sing? And I was like, okay, sure. And lo and behold, 2 years later, I got signed. So I'm like the reluctant lead singer of Candlebox. But not a bad gig, you know?
Yeah, that worked out well. How do you, we're talking about Steven Tyler, how do you keep your voice in shape, in such great shape? You don't smoke, do you?
I do.
You do? Really?
I'm an idiot. Yeah, I'm an idiot.
I would think that would affect your voice.
Yeah, but I think, you know, for me, I drink whiskey, and I've been doing this so long. Like, you know, I started singing when I was 6 years old in choir, and I sang in choir until I was a senior in high school. So I really, and even my throat doctor's like, I don't know what you've done to your voice, but, you know, keep doing it because it's it's healthy, and I don't have polyps or nodules or anything like that. I had a hemorrhage in, like, 1998, but other than that, I think it's just so many years of singing. I've learned how to use my voice and what it's capable of doing and what it's not capable of doing. And during a show, if I know I'm not going to be able to go where I want to go, I'll modify maybe the way I sing it to where the audience doesn't really know, but I know. So, you know, I tend to sneak things in sometimes where people may not recognize that not being the melody. But, you know, I try my best to sing the songs the same way every single night. And 99% of the time I do that. There is that 1% where I've just got to kind of fake it or move the melody around a bit. But I'm doing my best, man.
Oh, you do awesome. And, you know, a lot of guys, you know, a lot of rock stars that I talked to started out in choir, you know, and they were and they were Catholics. You know,
that's me.
Yeah. So you know that the Catholic guilt feeling, huh? Like I do too.
Oh,
it's terrible, isn't it? Especially when you're a teenager.
Yeah. Organized religion. Thank you so much.
Organized religion, right? Yeah. Well, what was the first concert you ever attended?
My first concert was the Big. It's the Butthole Surfers and Black Flag in San Antonio, Texas. I was 12 years old.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
Can you imagine going to a punk rock show like that at the age of 12?
At 12 years old, yeah. Have you ever been to CBGB's in New York?
I had been there. I've been there, but never played there.
Yeah. I interviewed a lot of bands back in, you know, like Blondie. I've talked to Chris Stein, and he's an interesting guy. He likes to talk about wrestling. Yeah.
Really?
Wrestle,
that's interesting.
Yeah, big wrestle nut. You just, you know, you talk, start talking wrestling, he'll talk your ear off. And it takes a little while to get him to talk. He was at Blondie did a benefit here in Sarasota, believe it or not, to a very small crowd, and it was just incredible.
I love here's Blondie. That's one of my favorites.
Yeah, oh, great band. Here's a question I ask everyone that I interview and get some interesting answers. If you had a Field of Dreams wish, you know, like the movie, to play or collaborate with anyone from the past or present, who would that be?
Wow. God, yeah, you know, I had an opportunity, and I would have to say the same thing, Van Morrison.
Oh, wow, yeah.
When I was 26, they used to do this songwriters thing in different states and countries and cities and things. And when I was 96, I was asked to do this one in Ireland. But we
really?
Were at 97, rather, and we were just finishing writing for the Happy Pills album. Mm-hmm. I would have been in Slane Castle in Ireland for 5 days with other songwriters, and then Van Morrison, Chrissy Hines, I want to say Tom Jones, and a bunch of those kind of interesting songwriters were going to be there as well. And what you did was you basically wrote a song with this guy, and then everybody got up and played it. And there was no audience or anything involved. It was just, you know, putting talents together. And my manager at the time was like, look, you can't go. You've got to go to L.A. and finish this record. And you know, it's for Maverick and Happy Pills and this. And I was like, but you're taking the only dream I've ever had of writing with, you know, somebody like Van Morrison and just crushing it under your feet. And he's like, well, I'm sorry, but you've got a job. And so that would be my thing, was to actually go back to 1997 and do that thing with Van Morrison, because he's just, in my opinion, one of the greatest ever. You know, this guy goes in and sings a song, gives it 2 passes in the studio, and tells his engineer to finish it.
Mm-hmm.
Amazing to me. And if I had a voice like that, that's what I would do, you know.
It's never too late. You can always try to, you know. Yeah, I mean, you guys would mesh well together, I think. You know?
I'd love to. I heard he's an asshole, though.
Oh, really? Is that right?
Apparently.
I hate when that happens.
Yeah.
You know, I've been lucky. I've probably interviewed, you know, over 1,000 guys, and I've never had one guy that was an asshole. Never. You know, because I wouldn't tolerate it anyway. I'd just send the interview and say, oh, well, it ain't going to work out. You know.
Very good. Very good. Yeah. You're very lucky, I'll tell you what.
I've interviewed a lot of them. Some guys that were huge, you know, back in the, usually guys from like the 70s, you know, from that era, you know. So it's pretty cool to get guys from the 90s, you know. I hope they don't start considering you guys classic rock now.
I think we are. I think we are, my friend. I'm sorry. I'm sorry to say.
Oh, boy. Kevin, I want to thank you so much. You have anything else to add?
No, man, I'm just thank you so much for taking the time. And, you know, like I said earlier, 25 years, I cannot believe it. And we're really looking forward to coming and playing in Florida. It's been a while. And thanks for taking the time, man. And really thank you for loving Disappearing Airports as much as you do and talking about it the way you have, because it's my favorite record.
Well, I appreciate you and everything you've done. And, you know, keep up the fight, you know, about gun control and everything, because more voices need to be heard, because the NRA has really gotten out of hand. That's not what they were all about when he started. Now they're just in it for the money, and there are gun store owners that will sell to anybody, no matter what, just for profit.
Yep.
So thank you for that. Thank you for being on the show, man, for all the great music you've given us. Good luck on the tour, man, and we'll see you in Florida.
Thanks, buddy.
All right, Kevin. Thank you so much, man.
Bye-bye.
Purchase the latest album from Candlebox entitled Disappearing from Airports, available now at Amazon.com. For more information, please visit www.candleboxrocks.com. Candlebox on Facebook, www.facebook.com/candlebox/candlebox on Twitter, twitter.com/candlebox. And Kevin Martin on Facebook, www.facebook.com/IMKSounds/. Very special thanks today to Denise of DMK Publicity for setting up this interview with Kevin Martin of Candlebox. And, of course, Doug and Don Newsom, the dynamic twins with BBS Radio, for making it all happen every show. Join me biweekly at our new time and date. Wednesdays at 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern on The Ray Shasho Show. If you have comments or suggestions or would like to be a guest on The Ray Shasho Show, email us at ray@publicityworksagency.com. And don't forget to purchase a copy of my book entitled Check the G's, The True Story of an Eclectic American Family and a Wacky Family Business, or the second edition entitled Wacky Shenanigans on F Street, Proud to be Politically Incorrect in Washington, D.C., available now at Amazon.com. I promise you, you will live it. Have a great week, everybody.
Thank you, everybody, for listening to The Ray Shasho Show, brought to you by the Publicity Works Agency. Call 941-877-1552 or visit us at publicityworksagency.com, specializing in author and music artist publicity plans. We shine when we make you shine. Join Ray Shasho every Monday at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern on PBS Radio Station 1.